The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes of frank, open, honest conversation about gambling addiction. And happy to have with me today Dominic. Dom joins us to discuss our recovery and addiction, and appreciate him sharing the story this morning. Dom, good morning. How are you?
Very good, Craig. Thanks. How are you?
Great. So I have to ask, when was the last date of your final wager?
February 5th, 2012.
All right. So you're over a decade in recovery from gambling. Congratulations on that.
Thanks. Much appreciated.
How old were you when you first got exposed to gambling? You know, way before it became a problem. When did it first enter your life, even in a good way or a social way?
When I was 11, I started to, watch adults gamble and everything. And I always loved numbers and wanted to be a big shot. And I got exposed to the betting slips, the old days when it was paper betting slips. You go 4 for 4 or 5 for 5. And I started to get exposed at that point in time at 11 years old.
You know, it's interesting. Everyone's so concerned, rightfully so, about how kids can gamble so easily now because they have the phone in their back pocket. But I'm a kid of the 70s, and I distinctly remember being in elementary school in the cafeteria, Roosevelt Elementary School, and in third grade, you know, filling out a parlay card for 50 cents, a quarter, a dollar, whatever it might be. It might have been. So while technology has changed, you know, and the access has changed, there were still people encouraging us to gamble back in the 1970s as well.
Yes, for sure.
So 11 years old, you're exposed to it. It obviously didn't become a problem for you at 11 years old. Do you remember looking back on your life and seeing a moment where you started to gamble more frequently?
Yes, it all started at opening night back in Atlantic City, May 1978, when the first day it opened in resorts. My uncle got us to the front of the line on a Friday night, Memorial Day weekend. Went in with my parent, my father, my uncle, my sister, and I was underage at that point, 16, and I pulled a slot machine, you know, put a quarter, whatever. And sevens came up, and, you know, it was a small amount that I won. And from that point on, it just took a life of its own. You know, once I started to become, you know, age to gamble down Atlantic City, it just took off from that point. So I think that was the one.
I've got to imagine with the very first casino on the boardwalk in Atlantic City and you being a teenager, that when you walked in, it had to grab you, right? The sounds, the smell, the lights, the... just the aspect of being in a real casino for the first time as a teenager had to be intoxicating.
Oh, it was tremendous. It was like, I was like what I always talked before. It was being a big shot. Wow, I made it as a big shot. And that was my feeling at that point in time.
All right, so then you grow up a little bit. You get into your 20s. You start making money on your own. Were you already knee-deep in it? Or did it start developing in a negative connotation once you started having money in your pocket?
Hey, yeah, I was knee deep in it. I got married at 24, and I just started when I was getting married. Like you said, started to make money, started to get credit cards. I brought my wife into the gambling. She was never a real gambler. She was a bingo player, mm-hmm. And I just got so knee deep into it where. You know, it was just out of control. I was betting also on sporting, but it was Atlantic City that was the catch for me.
You gambled on a lot of things, but the problem for you was the casino gambling.
Correct. Absolutely.
And give me an idea early on, before you started realizing you might have a problem, walk us through, like, when you were gambling, what was an average day like for you?
I would go down on a Friday night, I'd be staying there till Monday. And I wouldn't, at one point in time, I wouldn't be leaving the table until it was closing time. Back that point in time, I think it closed like 4 or 6 a.m. in the morning. I had my wife with me. We would stay in the parking lot until it opened up until 10 a.m. and went back in. And I wasn't, and we weren't at the casino. We were there. We didn't even have a room at that point in time. And I knew that was a problem. And it just ballooned, bringing my wife into it and just gambling every weekend and every day I could at that point in time. And it just started to get, it just started to deteriorate more, and it just became a financial hardship.
You know, yeah. So what did you do when you had those moments? Every gambler has them, when you lose more than you got.
Oh, at that point in time, I just opened up another credit card or had the home equity line of credit. And I just, and that's what it continued to do. At one point in time, it got so bad, I had to file for bankruptcy. And I even went down to, I was playing at Harrah's at that point in time. And I even told them if they could sign, I signed a document. Don't ever give me, I had a small credit line at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't go to GA at that point. And I just, after I filed bankruptcy, I went back to it.
So how old were you when this happened?
I would say I was approximately around 40 years old. So I was married.
You're 40 years old. So you've been a functional addicted gambler for 2 decades minimum. And you have line of credit out in the house. You're opening up credit cards. You filed bankruptcy. And then what happened? When the bankruptcy cleared, you went back, or you didn't even wait for it to clear? You just started gambling again.
I once it cleared, I waited until it cleared, and I went back that May. I think the bankruptcy was January or February of that year, and I went back that May, and then at that point it just got progressively worse. As you know, you win some, you lose some, you win some, and at that point I was emptying bank accounts for my son, my daughter at that point in time, and it just got progressively worse going into before I had my last bet on February 5th. I was getting casino credit from 3 different casinos, all in the Harrah's family. It's like getting mortgages at that point in time. It was crazy.
Yeah, well, you get markers at every casino you can, because if you lose at one, you go get in the car and you go to the next one. You lose at the next one, you go get in the car and you go to the third one, because the mentality is, I'm not going to lose everywhere tonight. And at some point, I'll have the big win. I'll pay the other 2 casinos back and I'll start from scratch. When you're going through all these bad financial decisions, how often, if at all, did your wife say, hey, how come there's no money in the bank account, or how come this, or how come that? Did that take place?
I had her kind of really still convinced. So I had a problem, but oh, everything's going to be okay. We're going to win it back. Don't worry. Or you could put me on an island and I could still go get money from a finance perspective. So it was always Peter to pay Paul.
Right.
And that's, so she bought into that. You know, She wasn't a big gambler or anything. She just came with me on those joints.
So as long as you were able to sell her on the story, she knew you gambled, so it wasn't a surprise that you might be going to a casino. But the amounts of wins and losses, or amounts just that you were wagering in total, you were able to hide from her.
Correct. Absolutely.
Got it. Until one day you couldn't. What's the bottom of the barrel story for you? Most of us have that, you know, last time we walked into a casino or placed a bet, you know, something terrible happened. Do you have a story like that?
Yeah, I absolutely do. So it was just before 2012, 2011, I was winning money, you know, backwards and forwards, and I was doing good. It was January of 2012. I was way up. But then all of a sudden, I went down to the casino, during this playoffs, betting in the casinos, and it just took a turn for its worse. I lost all the money that I won, plus I lost the money back from the casino credit, and that wasn't the bottom line there. I still have some money on my 401k. So I took an undetermined amount. You know, the amounts don't really matter that much, but it's a 401k check. They cashed it, and they gave me more credit. you know, they replaced my credit that I owed. And that was one of the bottoms of the barrel. And in between, I was flew out to Las Vegas and during that time, and I owed money out there also, came back. And just ironically, the bottom of the barrel had no money left. But I said, you know, the last bet was a winning bet for me. It was ironically Super Bowl Sunday, February 5th, 2012. I knew the Giants was a sure winner. Like we always know, everything's a sure winner. Right. I won that amount, and I felt sick because I had no money left. I had credit on both Atlantic City and in Las Vegas. And that was that's when I really needed, I needed to be helped. I get help, and I came clean with my wife that Monday. And then from that point forward, things got better, you know, from going into GA.
I'm going to stop you right there. We'll continue on in just a moment. This is Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Happy to have Dom on the phone with us. Dom, for the better part of 2+ decades, was gambling compulsively and out of control. And then on February 5th, 2012, after actually winning a bet on the Super Bowl, realized that he was in over his head. Before you went to your wife and before you had that epiphany that you were in trouble and you needed help, you know, we talked about money. And unfortunately, a lot of gamblers not only make bad decisions with money, but also take some liberties with other people's money. And I know you talked about kind of taking from your kids' bank accounts. Did you ever go down that road where, you know, you did illegal things to acquire money to either pay off debts or to continue gambling?
No, that one I wasn't, because I was like definitely afraid of going to jail, and I didn't get to that point, but that probably was going to be the next point, the next thing. So that's, I think, kind of got me into, like, I really need help at that point in time.
So when you win the Super Bowl bet and then you realize I got to get help, what, if, as best as you can remember it, you know, albeit, you know, 13 years ago, walk me through the moment when you went to your wife and sat her down and said, we need to have a conversation.
Well, it's ironic because I made a phone call. So at that point in time, I didn't talk to her face to face, and she knew something was wrong. And I told her on the phone, and she was really devastated. Yeah. Now at this point in time, and I forgot to mention this, I brought my son into gambling with myself also. So he was helping, you know, hiding stuff for my wife. And at that point in time, my son was home with her and consoling her while she was on the porch in the back. Why I was, you know, wasn't man enough to go home at that point in time. I stood overnight in the city on a Monday night, came home on Tuesday, and then that's when I went into GA. That's on that Tuesday.
Wow, that's so fascinating. So you love her enough and were in troubled enough by your own behavior that you needed to tell her and wanted to tell her, but couldn't summon up the courage to tell her face to face. And then even after telling her over the phone, still had to kind of get your shit together, pardon me. And then 24 hours later is when you actually walked into the house and physically saw her, huh?
Yes.
What was that? Is that moment forever burned into your memory or no?
Oh, it is, because she was devastated, and thank God for my son. Even though I brought him into this situation, he was a big part of consoling her and, you know, getting us. That was the epiphany moment at that point in time.
Did she mandate you better get your ass to GA, or is that part of the story you told her? I've got a problem. This is what I've been doing. But I also recognize I've got a problem, so I'm going to go to GA. Like, whose idea was that?
That was both of hers. It was, you know, because she mentioned it before to me. And I went one time before, way, way back with my mom, but I only went one time, and that was it at that point in time. But she knew that I needed to get there, and I knew I needed to get there because the next step was, you know, things could always bottom out even worse, as you know.
Yes.
And, so that was the moment at that point in time. It was both of us that we needed to know this is the route we needed to go to get better.
And, you know, it's interesting because the far majority of gamblers that do get help and wind up, you know, successfully navigating recovery and not gambling anymore have that moment where they slip up. It's the most natural thing in the world. And it seems to me like once you decided after February 5th, 2012, that it was just too much, you were tired, it was done, at no point did you ever make another wager. I find that fascinating.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
Like when you look back on it, was it just that you were tired of being tired or you were just done with the chase? Like what happened inside your brain, if you can recall it, where you said, I'm done and meant it?
Because of the secrets and just knowing, you know, I was always having, going way back when I was gambling, I had different addresses that I would send my credit card statements to and intercept them or go to different houses. So I was just, all the lies and deceit at that point was just caught up with me. And I needed to know, you know, I couldn't sleep at night, you know, at that
point.
It's
funny you say that. You know, when I was in the middle of it, I was working, you know, here at WFAN, and I had a home address, obviously, and I had the work address. And anything gambling related, I would only use the work address because, God forbid, you know, they were going to send a statement to my house or, you know, whatever it might be. I wanted all that stuff to go to work so I could hide it and continue the lie I was living, you know, with my family. So I can relate to making that decision. You know, I walked a mile in those shoes for sure. So I'm wondering, you go to the first GA meeting, but you got a lot of work to do at home, like re-earning the trust and respect of your wife. Walk me through that process.
Yeah, so when I went into the meeting, it, you know, it was the first meeting in Colts Neck on Tuesday. And then I went to the following meeting on a Sunday. And I was just told just to listen, as you know, and take it all in. And actually, my wife came with me in the first meeting. But they said, you know, she didn't belong there. She belonged in Gammonon because right. She really didn't have the problem. And so it was just taking in that first meeting and really, you know, taking it all in and what I needed to do. And the biggest, and one of the biggest, and two of the biggest people I wanted to mention, Arnie W. And Eddie J. Arnie just sat me down and said, Dom, your brain is scrambled. You just need to take the meeting in and then go from there. And you need to get on the exclusion list immediately. And not 3, 1, 3, 5 years. You need to really get on the exclusion list for, you know, forever. And that's what I did. That was my first step. And I knew that that was good, needed for me because Atlantic City was the real problem, you know. And that's what I started. And Eddie J, who's my sponsor, he told me, you also want to be honest. You want to get all the skeletons out of the closet. And that's where I became. Those are the two biggest things that I live today is honesty.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, that's the most important thing. And for a lot of us, the majority of us who are compulsive gamblers, you know, lying is a byproduct and it goes part and parcel with the gambling. We become world-class liars. And, for all the young people I counsel today and I encourage to go to GA, I do give them the caveat, especially for younger guys, there's no doubt a room can appear to be intimidating. Older guys in the room, grizzly veterans of gambling, and you walk in as, let's say, like a 25, 30-year-old kid, there's no doubt it can feel like a lot. And that's why we always say the second meeting is harder to go to than the first one. But the beauty of those meetings, and I am not a huge, you know, GA guy for me, for a lot of reasons we can get to another day. The beauty of the room is that early on, it is the one place in the world where you can be 100% honest with no negative reaction to it. Because when we first start, you know, coming clean with our family members and our loved ones, we kind of tip our toe in the water, right? We don't tell them everything because we want to judge a reaction before we go on to the bigger picture of what we were doing. But the GA room is the safest place for you to be the most honest. And I assume you had a similar experience.
Oh, absolutely. I was able to vet everything out that I needed to vet out, and then that's when I got the advice that, you know, you got to get honest with your wife and your family.
Yeah,
and that
that's
really
hard.
Cleans.
That ain't easy.
No, it isn't. That clean, and you know what, Craig, it really cleaned the slate for me. That's where I kind of live by now. I'm a really honest person, and I wasn't growing up. You know, coming from an Italian family, very, very secrets, a lot of secrets cooking, and but now I'm honest. I'm open and honest, and now I can put my head on a pillow. Obviously, we all have issues, but I can put my head on a pillow.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. Look, you know, going into recovery does not solve every issue. Financially, bankruptcy, relationships, you know, life is still difficult. No matter what you do, no matter how successful you are in recovery, it doesn't just automatically make every aspect of your life great, but you can't put your head on the pillow, and you do like what you see when you look in the mirror, because, you know, there was a day, I'm sure you could attest to this, where you would never let your wife look at your phone or touch your phone. Your emails were off limits. Calls that you got were off limits. And now, how nice is it that when you go to bed, you're an open book?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's really it's really great. It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling.
And I know we're running out of time here, but, you know, we talked to a lot of people who are at step one, where you were, let's say, January of 2012, where you know you have a problem, but you're not sure what to do about it. What advice would you give somebody that's at step one of what we hope becomes recovery?
The first thing is step one is just to be honest, get everything out. Just like I was taught in GA by my sponsor and Arnie W. and Eddie J. Just be honest. Be honest with your family and really take in. I know you have the steps in the program, but what really is priceless, like the old MasterCard commercial, is the therapy in the room. Just listen.
Yeah.
That would be my advice for people coming into the room.
And how much better is life for you without gambling at all?
Oh, it's tremendous. My daughter got married. She had a daughter, so I'm a granddaughter now, father now. Oh, thank you. My son's getting married in May. And it was all because of GA, the people in the program, just a couple people I mentioned, and all the rest of the people. And a program like you have, it's priceless too. You know, I listen to your program. It's like just being in a room.
Yeah.
You know, it's therapy.
Well, I appreciate that. And it is for me. You know, doing this show every week is kind of like me going to GA, because I get to hear other people's experiences and stories and get advice from them. I get to share some of my stories as well. And it's very comforting to me to do this every week, because you and I may never meet, but we're kind of like kindred spirits and brothers because of the silly things we did and the commonality of our addiction. And I'm so proud of you and so happy for you that you turned it around and you have this amazing life worth living. And I really hope that more people who've gotten through recovery share their story so that we could humanize the addicts like you and I more and more and more. And I can't thank you enough for coming on. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Craig. I really appreciate it.
Have a great weekend. Take care.
You too. Have a good one. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much for allowing us into your cars and living rooms and stereo speakers again. Joe Beningo's up next. Enjoy your weekend. And thank you so much for listening and supporting. Hello. My name is Craig.